No, Peter was a gamble.
We'll wait for Pam.
Yeah, we'll wait.
Hold your horse.
I'd like to call to order the policy board of the Metro Hudson Planning Organization. First item on the agenda is I want to introduce our new board member, Donald Angel. He's taking Greg's place. Greg finally weaseled away from us and got his replacement put in here. So welcome, Donald. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the previous meeting.
So moved.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, opposed, same sign. Old business, Lori, project update.
Okay. We're going to start off that update.
Has he met with you, Donnie? Met with you yet? That's the new...
Yes.
Okay. Because what she's going to do, the stuff that's highlighted is what she's going to talk about, not the other stuff.
Okay. Yes. So we're going to begin that update off on page 2. This is the combined City of Evansville, Vandover County inventory replacement. Data collection has been concluded and the data has been transferred to the city for review. For Vandover County, we have the Green River Road project from Millersburg Road to Kansas Road. The contract for construction was awarded to E&B Paving for a low bid of $5,305,000. On to page 3, for the town of Newburgh, we have the Newburgh Safe Routes to School project. A meeting was held with the Newburgh wastewater staff regarding manholes and sewer lines in the area. In addition, meetings with property owners in the affected area are being held, and the project is on track for letting on July 9th of this year. For Newburgh's sign replacement project, the CES, which is the cost effectiveness form, was reviewed, amended, and resubmitted at the beginning of March. And those are all the updates I have. Are there any questions about those or any others?
Thank you, Pam. Next item is a draft regional plan for sustainable development presentation by David Goffinette. David?
Thank you, Jack. So, back in January, I came before this body and kind of laid out a case on why this is the appropriate time to be doing sustainable development type planning in the region. But if you'll indulge me, I want to repeat a little bit of it as I kind of attempt to accomplish a pretty tough task tonight, and that is, as I understand it, you received your packets maybe on the 27th, and in your packets there is a request that you review a rather voluminous set of documents and offer input back to the MPO within the next 2 weeks. And when I say rather voluminous, we're talking in the neighborhood of 1,100 pages worth of documentation that we're going to ask you to review. My job tonight is to try and give you a little bit of a spark as to why that's so important to us. And if I thought that I could stand before this group in 15 minutes and tell you everything you need to know so you wouldn't have to look, I would be thinking way out of line. Quite frankly, we're going to need you to take a look at some things. So again, if you'll indulge me just a little bit, let me kind of walk you through this presentation. So in January, I came before this group. Most of them were here to Donald. I want to apologize up front for getting to walk into this. But I came before the group and I talked to you about some trends that were happening nationally. And I talked about the millennials and what they're looking for in terms of housing, transportation, so forth. I talked to you about the baby boomers. And that, interestingly, this whole concept of aging in place was really a repeat of the millennials just going in reverse, and that they were looking for transitional living opportunities and so on. And I stood before this group and said what we're seeing nationally is that the national trend as it relates to housing is that the demand for certain types of housing is not being met, and the demand for other types of housing is being more than met. And quite unfortunately, we're going in the wrong direction, and that that is that attached homes, small lot homes, there's a heavy demand, and nationally they're not being met. And then the larger lot, kind of your traditional third-acre type lot, single family, we're doing a very good job at providing that. Unfortunately, the demand is slowing, and we're seeing that we're having excess on that front. That all being said, that was a national trend, and I tried to talk to you about how we believe that the national trend is catching us right here in the Midwest. But I also wanted to add a few points here, which aren't really surprising. I would think that they're almost duh type statements, but are you aware that infill development costs one-third less for upfront infrastructure? I think most of you would probably say, if you really think about it for a while, you would expect it to cost more than one-third, or give more than one-third of the savings. But nonetheless, conservatively speaking, it's one-third. And then from the standpoint of generating revenue through property tax, are you aware that nationally, that per acre you'll see 10 times more revenue captured in urban or infill areas than you will in suburban? And of course, it's just a matter of numbers. If you really think about it, you're putting more people into one area, and in the urban areas you're seeing a lot of mixed development, maybe a more taxable unit than a single family dwelling. So two probably numbers that aren't overly surprising. And then I kind of stood before this group and I said, we have a regional growth trend that's a trend that's a little alarming. Quite frankly, and this slide, I've used it many, many times, but I think it gets the point across. I'll repeat it one more time just to say, if you took all the development associated with our population in 1990 and you put it into a circle in our three-county region, it consumed that much of the property. In 2000, it was this much. In 2010, it was this much. And if we continued at this same growth pattern as it relates to land consumption for that growth, this is what we would see in 2050, and that's pretty alarming, especially noting that we've seen about a 6.5% annual growth, which is, it's good, you know, at least we're growing, but quite frankly, I think we want to grow much more than that. And so this red circle could be alarmingly larger if we don't change the trend of how we're developing over time. And then I said, let's take a look at ourselves compared to other metropolitan areas throughout the Midwest. We tend to like to compare ourselves until the comparisons don't look real good. Quite unfortunately, what I'm going to show you is just one sample of where we're lagging well behind. And that's the concept of, and this is why it's so valuable to have census data that can allow us to track where our new development is happening. So between 2000 and 2009, where we're seeing our development in terms of infill, is at about 6.5%. Which interestingly means that we're probably developing out on a very balanced basis. We're not sprawling near as much as we used to, but then again, we're not seeing a tremendous amount of infill development. And the others on this list have just made a much more conscientious effort to insert, either through local investment of local dollars into the infill to try and entice development in infill, or they're getting private investment at a much stronger pace, thus they're getting more of their new development infill. Okay, so again, we think we can do much better. So I kind of laid that case out for you, and I said what we were going to be doing next in our next steps, which again, that was back on January 8th. I said in February, we're going to meet with the public one last time. We did so. We were in Henderson, Warrick, and Vandenberg counties throughout the month of February. We did a WNIN forum. I hope some of you had the opportunity to watch or listen to that forum. And ultimately, we went to the people and we said, this is kind of the last chance to make sure that we've hit the mark. We've listened, we've heard from you quite a bit. We want to give you one more shot to offer some thoughts. We got a little bit of feedback, not a tremendous amount, not overly surprising. After 3 years of work, we feel like we've got most everything that they wanted to see in there. Nonetheless, we went to that group and we said we're going to come back and see this group, as we did with the technical committee earlier today, and present to you the draft. And so we have this draft. This draft my apologies, I jumped ahead of myself. We prepared this draft keeping in mind that if you're going to have a sustainable development plan, you kind of have to hold true to some principles in putting this plan together. I mean, ultimately, you're either just planning or you're trying to plan in a sustainable manner. So these items, which I'm going to click onto the screen, are kind of the underlying tenets of when you're planning sustainably, as you take in what you hear from the public, as you offer thoughts, insight, and concepts, initiatives, possible policy changes, you need to keep in mind that you're trying to get as much development infill as possible. You're trying to create walkable neighborhoods, of course, logically, in the typical grid of our urban cores throughout this whole region. We do have a lot of sidewalk access. But inherently are more walkable. But what we're also saying is any new development, it needs to be walkable as well. And maybe I should emphasize the word neighborhood. The suggestion here is that we need to develop neighborhoods, not just homes. There is a difference. Preservation of our existing workforce housing. In our region, we have a large workforce housing stock. There's no question about it. It is deteriorating as well. We need to provide the impetus for homeowners and developers to invest in that workforce housing to bring it back up to a more acceptable level of condition, and thus we need to get more people to live in those houses as well. Any new development needs to be done along transportation arteries if for only one reason. We're trying to promote this concept of density so that in the long-term future, which I'm going to ask you to think about here very shortly, we'll have developed in such a manner that we can have densities that may better support transit in the future, understanding that there are density needs to make transit even remotely close to viable from a cost standpoint, and it's up to us to try and promote a style of living that will get us closer to that, and oh, by the way, all the while trying to protect our precious lands, sensitive lands, and for us the most sensitive one is farmland. It's one of the major economic drivers of our entire region, and every time we leap out, we have the potential to be leaping out into farmland and taking away an economic component. That's kind of a scary thing, not to mention our sensitive managed lands. We have the river, we have lots of assets that go along with it, and we have to protect those. So those kind of drive us when we're planning sustainably. And I want you to know that we went out and we talked to the public a lot. Again, clicking these all up here for you. Several SWAT workshops. We went out and we educated the masses on sustainable development. We had multiple committee meetings over the course of 3 years. We did a survey. We worked with groups like Evansville Voice and Engage Henderson. We did multiple charrettes. And we had over 100 stakeholder and interest group meetings that were held during the course of these three years. And I can tell you, we didn't lack for a number of meetings, and more importantly, we didn't lack for hearing from the public. There were strong opinions that were kind of in an alarming trend that probably needs some attention, and they had plenty of ideas for us to incorporate into this plan. So, I come to you today not with the final plan, but we're awfully darn close. And on our website, as I click these up onto the screen, there are 4 volumes of this plan that we're asking you to review. Again, including the appendices, which I didn't even list. In essence, sum total, we're looking at about 1,100 pages of a plan. Not only is it a task for me to stand up here and try and give you enough information to encourage you and so on to look at, take the time to look at this, it's a lot to ask. It's a big ask for us to stand up here and say, in the next 2 weeks, we would like for you to review it and give us your feedback. But that is sincerely what we're asking you to do. We believe it's incredibly important for this region. And I want to kind of just kind of give you a little splashing of what you might see when you start looking into this document. First off, we're going to talk about things that we refer to as regional game changers. So I talked about national trends, but ultimately what I'm telling you is this. There are some things happening in this region that are critically important. These are just a few select examples, but it's kind of a grab hold. This is our time. It is a big deal for our entire region that Evansville and Vandenberg County have now landed the hotel and convention center that will happen in the downtown. Not only is it big from the standpoint of the type of people and the number of people that we'll bring into this region as visitors, but it's jobs, several jobs that will be associated with this. That's a big deal. We need to kind of capture some momentum from that. This is a big deal too. Now I know in the very near future, sometime in late April, early May, we're going to find out exactly exactly where the IU Med Center is going to be located, and I said this before when I spoke with this group, and I got asked a very pointed question of where I think this thing should land, and I said, very politically correct, and I believe it. Regardless of which site is selected, as long as it comes, this is a big change and a game changer for our region. And again, I mentioned job totals, 3,000 to 4,000 were to expect, let alone students. These people need places to live. These people need places to recreate. We want them to find our region to provide the quality of life that they're looking for. And our plan speaks to that, and you'll see it speaks to a lot more. And I said this one before, too. Relatively speaking, this is, and Rusty's probably heard me say this many times before, this is our railroad. In the day, cities and towns were formed around railroads, and to make it really close to home, rivers as well. This interstate, generationally, will probably be the biggest deal I see happen from a transportation standpoint for this region in my lifetime. This is addressed heavily in the plan as well. Now, we'll also talk about, and again, all throughout this plan, we'll speak to more game changers, but we'll talk about economic development initiatives because we recognize that there is an economic component to this that must be satisfied, and if it doesn't make economic sense, we know it won't happen. Some of these seem rather grandiose, and I understand that, but if you don't think big, things won't happen, because here's what I'm asking you to think about. Take a few moments, if I haven't asked you to do this before, to think about yourself in 2040. And think about what you'd like our region to be in 2040. And think of whether you even believe you'll be alive in 2040. But that's what we're being asked to do, is to plan for 2040. I'll be 74 years old in 2040, and I have a real strong picture of what I think our region will be, and it will look a lot different than it is now. And I know that we have a responsibility to put things in place right now to make that happen. So when I talk about some of these, think big. 41, if I-69 comes in, if it locates other than on 41, which is being discussed, and I feel strongly and I want for it not to be on 41, and if we're able to complete University Parkway, the driving patterns on US 41 will change drastically. It really will provide a roadway that can be integrated in with the walking and biking public. And we're making steps already to make that happen. But that being said, it will change the dynamic of 41 in Henderson as well. If these changes happen from a transportation standpoint, we think there's huge economic potential on 41 involving transit and other services that we believe will be offshoots when 41 drives differently. We've got universities all throughout our region. We have the University of Southern Indiana. We have the University of Evansville. We have Ivy Tech. We have Henderson Community College. We have Harrison College. We have multiple other learning opportunities. We have lots of young people receiving a fine education in our region, and we fail somewhat miserably in providing that first step job for them. And we all know this. If you can get them right off the bat and hold them to 40, you probably have them for a lifetime. But we're not holding that group very well. Well, we think there are opportunities such as this, Foundertown. It is still a concept, but it is truly taking all of the assets of our universities tied to assets that also exist around us, like I-69, like Crane Naval Surface Warfare Center, and trying to develop a research or applied technology type center where people can get that first job coming out of college so that we can keep them. You'll also see some unique concepts on the other side of the river. We are truly bound together by the Ohio River, not divided by that river. And Henderson is on their game, and they're working very hard looking at some unique assets they have. One very unique one is the former power plant, HPML-1, I think it is. And they have some unique ideas that may reuse that building or may repurpose that ground, but it is ultimately located on a beautiful riverfront and has huge potential. Again, you have to think big in this world. So also, as you go through the documents, you'll see we talk a lot about growth and revitalization. I'm going to throw a few more numbers at you that I think are very important. For our region, this is specific to our region based on the research we've done, per acre, on average, we attain in property tax revenue about $13,000 per acre for urban development and about $3,000 for suburban development. And it's not hard to figure out why. It truly is about density. It's not to suggest One is better or worse than the other, but suffice it to say one does generate more money. And if you think about our growth over the course of the next 30 years, there's really a variety of ways we can grow. But ultimately, if we stay with business as usual, that would be the lower number in the lower left-hand corner, which is somewhere between that 5 to 6% of our growth happening within the urban cores, plural, in our region, at about, again, about 5, 6%, versus if you look at what we're trying to get to, which is about 45% of our growth and development happening in the urban core, you'll see that under the business as usual, we'll generate over 30 years, $4.5 million in revenue out of that development. But if we take the mindset of urban infill, during the same 30 years, we'll average $4.5 million a year in revenue. Huge difference. And this, again, is understanding. We're talking about just staying with the standard growth that we've had, 6.5%. If we can double, triple that, it would be drastically different. Again, it's just a numbers game, but it's real. I don't want you to understand anything about this particular graphic other than you see a lot of green on that map. We'd like it to stay green. That's just the bottom line. Now, we want to protect our farmland. We want to see our growth near or in our urban cores, and that's everywhere from Chandler to Boonville to Newburg to Henderson to Evansville to the Darmstadts. We want it growing in the urban core. We have ideas, and we think that neighborhood development is key to all this, so we think you should continue to focus your efforts on neighborhood development, such as Jacobsville, Glenwood, other neighborhoods in Henderson East End. Also, we know there are plenty of gray-filled sites in our region. We saw it on First Avenue, saw another one. I know we've got the Walmart site out on the west side, but we also have the Washington Square Mall area, which is, has a glimmer of hope. We believe that if you get the right population numbers in that area, it can support the appropriate kind of commercial development. And we think you need to focus on that. And when and if we do continue to grow out, we want it to be in a neighborhood way. Mixed use, commercial, transit, pedestrian, walking, biking, and neighborhoods in that type of development. Again, it's not a bad thing if you can recreate the neighborhood. You'll also see that we spend a lot of time in those plans talking about green infrastructure. We talk about the value of our greenway system, how desired and appreciated they are. We want to see more of it. And when I say we, it's the people of this region. We talk about in the urban core, there are some things you can do to green it up to make it more inviting, more a kind of place that people wouldn't mind to hang out at lunchtime if they step out of the office to grab a bite. And we think there's some unique green concepts like green roofs, rain gardens, and so forth that could be utilized in the downtown area as well. And one last thing before I kind of wrap this up, we also realize that when you plan for a region the size of our region, you can't plan for everything. So what we did is we created three core plans that we wanted to be called pilot plans. So if in our region, if someone wanted to take on a particular concept of planning, here's a model for you to follow. The neighborhood plan, we keyed in on the Henderson East End. If there are neighborhoods throughout this region that would like to take on planning, we've got a tremendous example for them to look at that they could follow. We also believe art districts are strong. Our particular art district has a lot of momentum going at this point in time. We created an art district plan. We think that you could model and scale our plan to fit any size art district in our region. And as well, we believe there, this idea of a typical town or courthouse square type community, we have our share of those in our region. We wanted a downtown revitalization plan for them to help them deal with the fact that we know that the commercial has chased the people out of the urban core, and there are ways that you can kind of bring your downtowns back up and make them kind of a vital component of your community again. Again, these are sample plans, and we hope that not only our people in our region model their efforts after these plans, but we would be happy to see other regions outside of ours take on some of this. So that's kind of what you're going to see when you start looking through these plans. And I will tell you that I stand before you right at this point in time and realize there are some base things that have to be in place for this to really take off. I'm not going to speak to every one of these. In fact, I'm only going to speak to the last one. But there are many things that can happen right away to make make this thing come to life, and none more important than the Regional Leadership Roundtable. In essence, it's much like this policy committee, trying to get representation from each of the communities throughout the region that are willing to stand up for their community and say, I'll take responsibility to speak on behalf of our community in trying to move these initiatives, projects, concepts forward so that we can achieve what we want to be by 2040. Now, it's a lot to ask, but someone's got to take responsibility for this, and we've down at the bottom of that slide where it says seek. 21 consortium members have agreed to from the beginning, to work with us through the development of the plan and to try and implement that plan. And each and every one of them, in their own way, are going to do that, but they will eventually lean on you as representatives of local government to allow them through policies and so forth to make this happen. So that regional roundtable group is probably as important an initial step as there is. And so I come back to this slide and say to you, so in a couple weeks, we'd like to hear feedback from you on what you've seen. You can provide it to us any number of ways. I think it's outlined in your packet. Because on April 3rd, we're going to come back to this group, and we will earlier in the day, we'll go back to the TAC, and we're going to ask them to accept the final plan. And of course, it can't be final until we get your last recommendations embedded into that plan. And then on April 10th, provided all goes well and you feel satisfied that this plan meets what your expectations are, we're going to celebrate the kickoff of this plan. We're going to unveil it and try and get the implementation going. So I brought along with me today, Matt Schrieffer's here, Bob Grury's here. They're just two of our team that have been a part of the development of this plan. We have plenty of folks here from the MPO that know a whole lot about this plan. So if there are any questions that we could answer for you before you start, if you have not already done so, we'd be more than happy to do that. But nonetheless, we appreciate the opportunity to nudge you along and encourage you to provide some input. Anything at all?
We're giving you a chance to breathe, Dan. Any questions? So when are we going to get this?
It's, again, all four volumes plus the appendices are on seekplan.org. One of the volumes you all are very familiar with because it's your metro plan. You may not need to review that since you've already approved that. But I think a couple of weeks, hopefully we'll get some feedback from you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you, David. Mm-hmm. Last chance. Any questions? Okay. Moving along. This year looks like you're next on the Henderson urban area boundary.
Last month, Steve Ross from KYTC actually discussed this topic about the Henderson urban area boundaries, and then KYTC asked us to review them and provide them with comments and stuff. So what we did is, based on the KYTC guidelines, we actually last week we met with our partners in Henderson, including Henderson County APC, City of Henderson, Russell Seitz was there, and Bill Kubiak was there too, and the city engineer was there too. So after discussing with them, we came up with a new adjusted boundary, and this is just a draft boundary for now. Basically, in the map, you see both the 2010 census urbanized area boundary and also the adjusted urban area boundary for Henderson. So what we included in the adjusted urbanized area, urban area boundary that is not in the census boundary is basically our high traffic attraction sites, such as the Ellis Park, the Audubon State Park, and then the Henderson River Port and the Henderson Airport. Along with those land uses, what we did is to make the boundary more regular, we just followed the road network to go from north to south and east to west. So based on that, we came up with the boundary that you see in the yellow color in your map, and then the blue boundary is the 2010 census boundary. So this is the draft map. Next month we'll come back to you along with a justification letter as to why we are including the other areas that were excluded in the 2010 census boundary, and ask for your approval.
Any questions? Thank you.
Chairman, I got a comment, not a question. We did look at several variables for increasing the size of the boundaries, but I want to tell you how informative and helpful the staff was to give us alternatives to look at. You know, if you look at this, you need to look at that and all that. And you know how that goes back and forth. So they did a great job of that, and we appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Comments? Okay. New business. Carrie? Item A.
The draft 2015, fiscal year 2016, UPWP is out on our website right now. We also have a couple of hard copies in our office if you would rather look at that one. They've also been sent to our state and federal planning partners, and I've requested comments to be received by March 27th so that I can make the necessary changes and come back to you guys with their comments. For those of you that are new, our UPWP, it includes all sources of funding the NPO will use in the next fiscal year, in addition to the scope of work the office will complete. We do have a tentative budget for fiscal year 2016. However, it's just a partial budget because we're using an estimate of Indiana planning funds. But as you can see from this next spreadsheet, we receive probably about 15 different sources of funding. So, but we won't know until next spring what our 16 values will be. So those will be amended in the spring like usual. Also, we're required to enter the 2015 planning emphasis areas. These are given by the Indiana Division Office of Federal Highway, so these are areas that we need to focus on next year to meet the MAP 21 regulations. And those include the ADA transition plans, part two, the functional classification update, and the pavement management system. And those are all in each of these items. If you look back at that page 40, the big table, each of these job numbers, each of those have two or three pages in the UPWP that list the scope and the products that we will produce with them. So those P's will be found in those areas. And if you look at the bottom line item, the total cost is $1,624,946 for fiscal year 2015. But if you move on to this page 50, you can see that not all of that is operating expense. The $906,182, that's our operating expenses. And then I extracted our direct expenses that we're paying to our consultants for our projects that are still going on. These are multi-year projects. As the public education air quality show should be finished in 15, as well as the Metz COA, the Evansville Bicycle and Pedestrian Plan, and the Regional Pavement Management. So $718,764 will be paid out to our consultants. So that's really not part of our operating expenses, and I just wanted to extract that out so that you have a clear base of what our operating expenses are. And then if you go to the last page, this isn't in the UPWP, but it's a comparison. So I extracted all of those contract amounts so that you have a clearer picture of what our operating expenses are from year to year since 2010. And for each item that has changed more than 5%, I have put I've put a footnote in to why we are increasing our budget for that. Overall, there's a net increase of 3% based on our operating values. So for the first one, our garage and motor, it's increased by
$500, which is 13%. We are programmed to do several more traffic counts, which is going to put more miles on the car, and we'll have to use more fuel for that. The next one, other supplies, we've increased it by $500. Which is 50%, but if you see back in 2010, that was the same amount that we had in 2010, and most of this is for our tape coat, which is like the duct tape that goes over the traffic counters in the middle of the road, and since we're doing more traffic counts, we'll need that, and also goes towards some of our printing costs for our documents. For C, the printing and advertising, we've bumped it up, the change is 50%, but we've bumped it up to $3,000, and as you can see in the past, in 2010 through 2012, it was above that. But we have a lot more ads that need to be published for call for projects, RFPs. We also have an amendment to the transportation plan, and that results in several added publications that we have to do. And then for D, for rent, it's a 6% at $34,000. It's really not 6% because $32,000 was the budgeted amount for 2014, and 2014's amount was really, it was about $32,750. They have included the security into the rent, so we have to pay a portion of when you guys come in through the security down there for the officers. For subscriptions and dues, we've increased that by $500, which is an 8% change. Debt is for computer and software licenses. We are looking at purchasing new web design software for our website, and that may have a monthly maintenance fee, and then some of our office software and our GIS software, that all has maintenance fees and licenses associated with that. And then for the audit, that's gone up 19% to $10,750. That really, again, that was a budgeted amount, and it came in last year at $10,500 because we had the HUD, the SEEK project that we did, they had to audit HUD and federal highway grants, when in the past it's always been federal highway grants or Department of Transportation grants, so there was extra time that had to be added in there, and when 2015 comes around, they'll be doing our 2014 fiscal year audit, and we'll still have those HUD grants in there. So these are just, this is just a background, and you'll be seeing these numbers for the next 3 months, because next month in April, we'll want an approval for the UPWP, and then we'll bring the draft budget back, which will be more detailed than this, in May, and then we'll want approval of the fiscal year 15 budget in June. So does anyone have any questions, or if you have comments, if you can get them to me before March 27th, that would be great, too.
Any questions? Yeah, let's resolve the numbers.
Okay.
Thank you. Next item is Rob.
The Evansville MPO requests approval of the federal fiscal year 2014 FTA annual list of certifications and assurances. This annual document certifies that the Evansville MPO will follow the 24 applicable provisions when applying for and receiving FTA grants during the federal fiscal year 2014.
Any questions? I'm going to move for approval.
So moved.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thanks, Rob. You were short and sweet. Laura Henderson, unfunded needs list.
Right. The MPO has received a request from the City of Henderson to add a project to KYTC's unfunded needs list. And most of you, I think, have been here long enough. You've been through at least one prioritization of those projects. Just for our newer member, these are projects that are identified either locally, regionally through the MPO or through the Kentucky District Office, State Office, and they are on state facilities, and they currently don't have funding identified to pay for them. But anyway, the project is to reduce the vertical curve, or basically cut off a hill on Kentucky 136 Madison Street at mile marker 20.4 near South Heights Elementary School to improve sight distance in both directions. And this project was reviewed and approved at the technical meeting this morning.
Questions? Does someone from Henderson want to make the motion?
I will. So moved.
Second.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thanks. Craig, it looks like you get the rest of it.
I'm going to try to be as brief as I can because I'd like our new member, Mr. Angel, to come back another time. We've had some pretty good lengthy presentations this morning or this afternoon. We got three TIP amendments, or actually four, I'm sorry. And I'll just go ahead and state first, we are still waiting on the conformity confirmation on our transportation plan, so we're asking you to approve these today. We're going to send them up to Federal Highway, and they'll then process these through as final amendments through their process once we get the conformity confirmation determined for the new transportation plan that we just had approved here recently. So the first is Green River Road in Vandenberg County, road widening from Kansas Road to Boonville, New Harmony. This is a project that was in the TIP already. We're revising the schedule and funding to touch on that and moving that from a locally funded project over to a federal aid funded project. And you'll see the dollar figures there, and I'm going to avoid running through all of these numbers so that we can cut down on some time there a little bit. If you have any questions about any specific ones, you can go ahead and ask. The next three really are kind of similar projects utilizing Section 5310 transit funds from some of our social service providers here in the community. We have one from Evansville ARC, and they're asking that we add a modified van purchase for them. Total project cost you see there, $38,920. Also, we had a request from the Evansville Association for the Blind, adding a vehicle purchase as well, $48,351. And the last was from the Easter Seals Rehabilitation Center, and they're adding a body on chassis vehicle with lift. Total project cost $51,000. And those are all 80-20 projects with federal 5310 funds and a local match.
Questions? I entertain a motion for approval.
So moved. Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, Craig, what's the next
band? Yep, and we also have several administrative modifications to the TIP as well. These have been processed. They can proceed right now, so these are just for your information. We had several from Warrick County, Oak Grove Road Phase 2. They're revising the right-of-way funding and construction funding in the TIP as it's described there. I won't belabor the point in details there with those. Oak Grove Road Phase 3 from Bell Road to State Road 261. They're also revising the funding on that project. Lincoln Avenue Phase 3, road widening from Bell to Lynn Road, revising construction costs, right-of-way and cost and the schedule on that project as well. Town of Newburgh requested a revision to their sign replacement project, a small cost increase on that project. The Town of Newburgh Rivertown Trail, we are revising the schedule and funding on that project as well, as you see there. And Pigeon Creek Greenway, Arts High Rail, Glenwood Urban Enterprise Corridor, we are revising the right-of-way funding on that project as well. And all of those, I believe, are various forms of federal aid 80-20 projects on the split for all of those.
Any questions? Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
Item 4, other business, approval of bills. Do I hear a motion to approve?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Any public comment? Seeing none, we're adjourned.